So I asked you about platinum sensitive recurrence in the patient with the BRCA germline, but we also asked the audience about the patient, we just said BRCA wild type at first platinum recurrence. And it was interesting because, you know, of course, this has been an issue of, do you sort of use a BEV-based approach or a PARP-based approach? And again, BRCA wild type. And at this point, 2019, it looks like people are kind of split. Mm-hmm. You know, about half of them go just without a PARP inhibitor and they stick with chemo-BEV. And the other half go with a PARP inhibitor again, olaparib and niraparib a little bit more than rucaparib. And then there's like maybe 10%, again, try to do both some with the BEV during the chemo. What's your take on this? And again, same thing in terms of choice of PARP inhibitor. I'm guessing it's the same that you just said, but maybe you can go through.
I think it's the same.
Yeah. But what about whether you're going to use a PARP-based strategy or sort of a chemo-BEV-based strategy?
So I think honestly here, there's not a right answer. I think this is where you have to talk with your patient and individualize based on kind of the information you have at hand and make the best decision. So you have bevacizumab that has abundant data and modest but statistically significant overall survival advantage. If you use bevacizumab maintenance in the first recurrent setting, and that was demonstrated in GOG 213. So that makes a lot of sense. I think if you had a BRCA wild type patient and you said, I'm going to use BEV, I mean, I think you're well within the standard of care. You also have from Aerial 3, NOVA, and then Study 19 gives us the BRCA wild type data for olaparib. You have hazard ratios that are relatively impressive for use of PARP inhibitor in a BRCA wild type population, with certainly a gradation with whatever assessment of homologous recombination deficiency was used in the studies. So, of course, the HRD group did better than the complete biomarker negative group, but all groups benefited by a hazard ratio. So that's why you didn't have to tie a biomarker to use of a PARP inhibitor in that second line. So if you wanted to use a PARP inhibitor, I think, again, you're well within the standard of care. I tend to look at these patients, you know, and I talk to them and see what they want. Some patients want nothing to do with oral regimens. You know, there's certain decisions that are made when you actually ask your patient what they want. But everything else being equal, I tend to look at these patients, and at least at this point, I want to make sure that for patients for whom it makes sense, they have access to a PARP inhibitor, because I don't think the HRD assays have helped us really identify patients who will never benefit. And in the first platinum-sensitive recurrence, I know I can get a PARP inhibitor for everybody. If I wait and hope that she's platinum-sensitive again, she might not be. And the only patients right now that can get PARP inhibitors as treatment are those with a BRCA somatic or germline mutation. So I may miss my opportunity to use a PARP inhibitor for a particular patient. So I tend to use PARP inhibitors first in that first recurrent setting, and then I'll use bevacizumab if they're still platinum sensitive in that setting, or if they're platinum resistant, I'll use it in that setting where I know it has still significant benefit. But that's sort of what I do. Other providers do use the HRD test to try and pick who they want to give PARP to and who they don't. I don't think that's wrong. You know, I think we do the best we can to provide the most options for our patients, to have options lined up for them and not eliminate options down the line and pick the best thing for them at the right time. And there's still some clinical equipoise in this space that I think you see reflected in your polls.